Thanks so much for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad when you're here. And if you'd like to take part in our conversations, here are the numbers, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Political party identification by voters began slipping decades ago. By most polling these days, the people who call themselves independents, not either Democrats or Republicans, outnumber the members of either party. A third to nearly half of voters call themselves independents, and if they're registered that way, they can't vote in party primary elections in many states, including Oregon. California, of course, switched to a top two primary system with last year's elections, all candidates and voters in the same pool. And now an Oregon man wants Oregon voters to consider something similar. Mark Frohnmayer is an open primary supporter and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange today. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Jeffrey, thanks for having me. I should note that this is in some ways similar to the California open primary, but distinct in a pretty important regard. We actually call this approval voting primary.
Approval voting, okay. So, we'll work with that stipulation at the outset. Yeah. I want to get into some background before we get to the mechanics of it all, though. In particular, your last name is well-known in Oregon politics. Your dad ran for governor in 1990. Tell us a bit about your family connections and history in Oregon politics.
Well, I was born into a legislative race. So I was from the time... All through growing up, my dad was in the legislature, then he was the state's attorney general for 11 years, ran for governor, and then ultimately became the president of the University of Oregon. So public service has sort of always been a characteristic of the family existence.
Well, and I must admit, your dad was very accessible, certainly as attorney general. I remember being surprised as a young reporter. It's like, my God, the attorney general of Oregon actually returns my phone calls personally?
Well, absolutely. I think he looked at it as an opportunity to do good by the state, and I think Oregon is one of those places where our elected officials generally are actually pretty accessible. It's not a huge state where we're so far removed from the center of power that we can't have a voice.
You were a teen, by my math, when he ran for governor. Were you heavily involved in his campaigns?
I was certainly, you know, went door to door and dropped off literature and was a staunch supporter.
Mm-hmm. And so, but what has your level of political activity been between his last campaign and today?
I've been pretty removed from the political process for most of that time. I got engaged in politics again during the presidential campaign in 2004. And then from then on have become more and more engaged in that particular process.
And what got you involved in the presidential campaign of 2004?
Well, I was just really dissatisfied with the state of our country at that point. So I worked hard to bring what I considered a better voice to the White House, ultimately not successfully. But that's what really got me engaged in more progressive-looking politics.
So were you for John Kerry or for somebody else?
I was for John Kerry.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what is it you'd like to do then? Approval voting is the system you're talking about here. So similar in some ways to top two primary, but different in some ways.
Well, you know, at the outset, you sort of laid out the baseline of the case, which is that in terms of the voter registration that we have nationally and here in Oregon, a large portion of the electorate does not affiliate with one of the two major parties. But the primary system that we have in place, which is really our main candidate filter for the general election, is totally partisan. So we get one candidate from each of the two major parties, and voters get to decide between those two candidates, but they don't get any real voice. Those non-affiliated voters don't get any real voice in who those two candidates are in terms of who are the top two that actually get to go onto the general election. And I think it's important that we recognize that the system that we have in place today really is a top two as well. It's just that one of them always comes from the Democratic Party and one of them always comes from the Republican Party. So the system that I'm proposing is, instead of different ballots for different parties and you get a ballot based on which party you're in, we look at the primary as a first filter in the general election. And so we say, okay, all of the candidates are on the same ballot. And then you, the voter, regardless of what party you affiliate with or what party a candidate affiliates with, you can approve of all of the candidates that you would like to see move on to the general election. The top two of the most approved candidates then go on to the general election for a runoff.
So when you say approve of all of the candidates, how does that work?
Well, you get basically a thumbs up, thumbs down on each candidate in the race. So instead of thinking of it as one vote per office, you get one vote per candidate. It's that simple.
So if there are five people on the ballot, you think, yeah, they should all be running in the general. You vote for all five?
Absolutely. Yeah. In that case, your vote, you've essentially made your vote meaningless in that primary election because you've diluted it to the point of zero differentiation between candidates. But if you wanted to, you could vote for all five.
All right. But for example, if you think like these three of the five are good, you'd vote for those three.
Sure. Yeah, you can think of it like a job hiring process. If you have a bunch of candidates for a job, this would be a way of narrowing that field down to the top two candidates that you get to invite back in the general election for a more detailed interview.
All right. So, but it gets mildly confusing, obviously, because you could have 100,000 people voting in this election, but casting essentially 200,000 or more votes.
Well, you get again one vote per candidate, so no candidate is going to have 200,000 votes.
But I mean, I'm talking about the total vote between all the candidates,
right? And I what you would look at is you would say, okay, it would be ideal. Imagine a scenario. Paris has thought, imagine a scenario where we had two candidates standing for a general election, and it was just a really difficult choice because we liked both candidates so much, right? Imagine that you had two candidates with 70%, 75% approval going into the general election, and then it becomes a very nuanced selection between two. The challenge that you have is if you have, let's say, 5 or 6, 10 candidates in a race. So you've got 10 candidates in a primary election. If voters can only select one candidate, then you could have two candidates advance that only have between them 25 or 30% approval of the general population.
All right. So is this going to be a little tricky, you think, for voters to wrap their minds around?
To me, it seems like a pretty simple system, and it defaults to the system that we have now. So if you are confused by the idea of supporting more than one candidate in the election, you can just vote for one. There's no obligation to select more than one. And I think this is going to be particularly important for third parties and for minority voices within the elective system, because even in today's top two primaries like exist in Washington State and California, those voices tend to get shut out of the primary. You always, as a voter, are making a choice between the candidate that you think has a chance of winning or moving on and the candidate that really supports the viewpoint that you share. So in the approval system, you can cast an approval for both.
Interesting. Mark Frohnmayer is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is a proponent of approval voting, which would change Oregon's primary system. He's in the process of mounting the effort to put this measure on the ballot for Oregon voters to consider. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. What do you think about primary voting? If you're a registered independent, as many people are now, when was the last time you voted in a party primary? Did you ever, if you're a younger voter? Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email jx@jeffnet.org. Mark, I want to come back to what you just said. Voices are shut out of the primary. I mean, something about the way that you describe the scenario where you're essentially voting for the person you think will win, do you think it has gotten that calculated for most people now? Instead of voting their hearts, they're voting for electability, quote unquote?
Well, absolutely. So you look at, I mean, even think back to the 2000 presidential campaign. There was a third party candidate in the form of Ralph Nader. And there were many people who were Ralph Nader supporters who said, you know, I just can't vote for this candidate that I believe in, because doing so would tilt the balance to the candidate that I am least favorable towards. Now, enough people actually did vote for Nader in the general election to tilt the balance to Bush. So this is an example of what we call the spoiler effect. Right, that's where you vote for a candidate that most closely resembles your viewpoint, and as an end result, the candidate that least resembles your viewpoint actually gets elected. So the spoiler effect is very real. It's used actually as a way of of skewing a party's political position, where and you see this actually in the country today, where Republican congresspeople are afraid to take a position they actually believe in because they think they're going to get a primary election challenger, or they think somebody's going to come in and spoil the election.
The examples we keep using are presidential primaries, but or presidential elections. Would the presidential primaries change with this? Should it take effect in Oregon?
No, no. This right. won't.
They'd be
this
the same.
Won't touch the presidential primary. I think that the presidential race is just a good example because it's something that is still familiar to folks. But the congressional elections that are being affected right now by the so-called primarying. Would certainly be impacted by this measure.
I was just taking a look at some numbers, by the way. This is like the Gallup poll for the October 3rd through 6th period of this year, so just a couple of weeks ago, and the number of people who identified themselves as independents was up to 47%. Granted, they're not necessarily registered that way, but that's a lot of people who consider themselves not a member of either party, and that's almost up to the 50% that Republicans at 20 and Democrats at 30 add up to together.
I mean, think about we're living in what we consider to be a representative democracy, but then you have 47% of the people basically shut out of the process in the most important step, which is the very initial selection of candidates for the job.
So it's easy to sell this to independents, I'm sure, but then sell this to the political parties. If somebody's a Democrat or a Republican, what do they see as the advantage in moving to the approval voting system that you're espousing?
Well, it depends on where you land on the spectrum. So I think a lot of people consider themselves moderates, even within a political party. If you are a moderate Republican, for example, you've just, over the last 20 years, you've seen your party run far to the right, mostly through the gaming of the election system dynamics. So if you're a moderate, I think, in either party, Actually, anybody across the political spectrum ought to be able to look at the debacle that's been going on in Washington, D.C. and say, there's got to be a better way.
So what in particular produces this effort now? How long have you been working on the idea of the approval voting primary system?
So I first started cooking on it back when Phil Kiesling put up the open primary.
It was back in 2008, wasn't it? Yeah.
2008. To me, I really liked the idea of a more accessible primary, but the challenge that we just talked about as far as if you have more than three or four people in the race, then there is, in that system, there is still the opportunity for a small minority to move on to the general election ballot and then ultimately not be represented, elect candidates that are not representative of the districts that they come from. At the time, I was very enamored with a system called instant runoff voting, where you actually rank candidates by preference. But I think to your question earlier about complexity, the ballot for an instant runoff voting system is actually quite a bit more complicated than the simple connect the line ballot that we have today. And so as I sort of just continued to stew on it, the idea of running an approval voting system in the primary seemed to be a reasonable balance between those two different poles. So my brother and I actually drafted the measure a couple of years ago, but it was the government shutdown that ultimately prompted me to just say, hey, I'm going to submit this to the Secretary of State. This is just ridiculous.
When we talk about the complexity of this, and I did scratch a little note here to myself about overvote and whether voting machines, and I grant that this is probably in the realm of not my problem for the person who's putting the initiative petition into place, but have you talked to anybody at the county clerk level who said that, yes, this is entirely possible right away or might take some tinkering with the software or something?
The folks that are looking at it right now are the legislature's legislative council. So I have not talked to the county clerks. My strong inclination would be that it would be a matter of programming. So, right now the machines are programmed to discard votes that are cast for multiple candidates within the same race. Um, but that should be a relatively simple fix.
Well, yeah, come to think of it, you can have, like, vote for a city council, vote for three, and four people appear. So it seems like it would be a pretty easy fix now that you mention it.
Absolutely. And actually, Oregon has used approval voting in before. There was a referendum of five different systems of doing, I think it was a school finance or something like that related in a couple of decades ago. And you could vote for as many as you wanted, and the top one won. And like you say, with certain nonpartisan races where you have multiple seats that you're electing for, we already do approval voting. And I think we should look at this, we're not actually voting for one. Ultimately, we're voting for two, right? There are two seats in the general election. Mm-hmm. And so it makes a lot of sense to me that we ought to have a voice in both of those candidates that go up for that job.
But you would still have the option, if you can't quite decide on number two, that you could vote for a third, for example.
Absolutely.
All right. Mark Frohnmayer is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is proposing a system of approval voting for Oregon's political primaries, not quite like California's top two primaries, but similar. And he's working on a ballot measure on that right now. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange and tell us what you think about the party primary system now or what it should evolve into in the future. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Here's N-Word in Ash Valley. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange with Mark Frohnmayer.
Yeah, I was just turned on the radio, and it seems to me that what we're talking about is the electoral process, and what's missing is the fact that there really is no need for political parties. What we need is a popular vote that elects popular people who are known locally. The Electoral College, as designed on the federal level, is supposed to have young candidates that are, like, the representatives are supposed to be at least 25, the senators 30, and the president 35. Well, that's all been corrupted, and I think it all comes from that law that was passed 100 years ago. You know, it limits the number of representatives, so now we have this popularity contest, and it's all about advertisements. You know, what we need to vote for are electors that we know and trust to make wise decisions for their local community. You know, it's supposed to be like on a grassroots level.
So we vote for electors for Congress or for just for the presidency, or what are you talking about here?
Yeah, well, the Electoral College in general, on the state level, is supposed to have the qualifications where they have their older people, older, wiser people who have a clue about what's going on. You know, I mean, right now we have a problem because nobody really knows how it was supposed to work. We're a young country, and you know, compared to most. And so the process, it's like a very difficult thing to use the language of the future rather than replicating the past. And the Electoral College, like in the old world, the Electoral College was an elite, the ruling class. They chose who the kings were going to be, you know?
The nobles.
But in our country, it's supposed to be people-based, so the people should know the electors, and then they can, you know, through experience, you know, like if we actually had a young Congress and a young president, you know, they would grow up to be the electors. You know, be like a revolving door, 2 years for representatives, 6 years for senators. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't be these lifelong politicians.
Okay, let's get a response from Mark. Thanks for your call, Edward.
This isn't
really presidential politics you're talking about at all, though, is it?
No. In fact, this doesn't touch that portion of the elective system. We're really looking at or races within Oregon, statewide and local. But I think the point is well taken, that the point of representative democracy or the whole idea of representative democracy is that we actually elect people that represent the will of their geographic locales. The challenge that I've got with the partisan primary system, and I think that a lot of people have with the partisan primary system, is that it puts the party before the people. You know, it's sort of we the party. And in order to even get into the conversation at the general election, you've got to pass one of the two-party filters.
And the filters are obviously very different these days. The two parties are very far apart. And so, for either one, you have to run hard to one direction and then back toward the middle in the general.
Right. So you have to pick a party that sort of most closely resembles your actual political viewpoints. Then you have to pretend to that party that you fit within the mold. And then, like you say, you've got to kind of pivot back and pretend that you're actually for the whole populace. And the end result is nobody actually knows where anybody stands. So I think a primary system where during the entire elective cycle, candidates are appealing to the whole of the electorate just makes a whole lot more sense.
They're talking to all the people all the time, not just the folks in their own party.
Yeah, well, part of it has to do with once you are elected, you're going to be representing the entire electorate. So you don't want to be in a position of having to choose between, you know, do I dance with the ones that brought me, or do I actually do what I think is right for the district that I'm from?
So you're aiming for the November 2014 ballot, is that right?
That's right.
Do you think it'll have much effect one way or the other based on what else is on that ballot? Oregonians could be voting on same-sex marriage again, et cetera. There's a couple of other things that could make this a really interesting ballot. November 2014, certainly a governor's race, a U.S. Senate race, all kinds of things on there. Does it stand to your advantage one way or the other, or disadvantage what else is on there?
I really haven't thought it to that level. I think that there, from what I understand, there'll be a number of ballot measures that are sort of progressive in nature. I would think that would be a benefit, but you know, the hope is that it is a high turnout election that a lot of Oregonians bring their opinions to.
So, Mark Frohnmayer, there was that vote, as you mentioned, Phil Kiesling's ballot measure back in 2008 that failed by something like a 2-to-1 margin in open primaries. Are you daunted at all by what happened there, or is this just so different you think it'll be a different result?
So to me, this is a system that actually fixes what I consider a weakness in the open primary initiative, and I'm hopeful that that differentiation will make a difference. I also think where we are in the political process right now, just as far as the hyper-partisanship that we see on the national stage has really awakened people to this particular problem. So I would think that this time around that it's going to be a whole different story.
All right. Lots of signatures to get before it even gets to the ballot. We're talking about approval voting with its supporter, Mark Frohnmayer. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Jeffrey, thanks for having me on the show.
You bet. We'll be back after a break with Garrison Keillor and the Writer's Almanac. Please stay tuned.